Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Guest today, Io Disu. Io, please tell us where you're calling in from, first of all, and what you do for a living with Octillion.
Sure. I'm calling in from London, the UK. And in terms of what we're doing at Octillion, Octillion really was founded from a lot of introspection between myself and my business partner, KC, when we were just basically looking at our own lives to sort of see how we're living. So I'm very big on sports. I wanted to be a footballer when I was younger. So I did a lot to just try to better my chances of achieving success there. I think it was my dad one day, he was telling me that there are more people wanting to be footballers than there are doctors. And with that, the competition is stark. So you might be a decent player, but you just might not be good enough. So I would always try my best to do things. So extra training, whether that be with the ball, without the ball, extra sorts of like physical training. So I went to a gym and all that when I was like 15, 16. But just doing all of that, and then where things really started to change was when I basically looked at my diet. So I was just looking, I was being educated more around sort of like the benefits of having a really balanced diet, but also really good whole food diet. So a lot of like the foods that you're eating should be the ones that you're cooking, or at least they should be real foods as opposed to processed foods. So just with that in mind, always with that in mind, fast forward, let's say maybe almost 7-8 years after that, I then connected with KC, and then we just came, and then initially the goal was, when I started the business, was to acquire a single e-commerce business, because I had learned around, about the search fund model, which is basically a model where an entrepreneur seeks to acquire a business instead of starting one. Like, so today you just learn about starting a business from like sort of like the celebrity CEOs that you see, but there's another way of getting into business, which is also acquiring a business. So buying something that's already there and then just optimizing it and growing it. And I think that's where my skill set lies. So when we connected, he asked me a very good question, which was, oh, why do you want to just buy one business? And I was like, yeah, that's a very good question. So initially, as I said, buy one e-commerce business, that's super generic. It's not specific enough. And there are tons of e-commerce businesses out there. So what are you focusing on? Is it logistics? Is it fashion? Is it apparel? Is it electronics? Is it food and beverage? What is it? So we did a lot of digging. And then we just said, okay, let's look at our own lives and let's see how we like to live. He had a partner, that is, he had a big health scare. And he realized if he was going to change that around, he needed to change his diet. And myself, just with the way that I live, I've been intermittent fasting now for probably more than 5 years. I'm going to say my diet is perfect, but I think my diet is very good in terms of like the foods that I eat and things like that. So we're like, okay, we both have, what's it called, a love for health, a passion for life, and we both like to have quality foods in terms of the foods in which we're putting into our bodies. So let's look at the food and beverage space. And then we're looking at just sort of like the macro trends as to, okay, what's going on. And what you realize is that a lot of the bigger players in the food and beverage space, their model is just built for repeat purchase. So to basically get that, they're going to add a lot of preservatives, additives, sugar, salt into chemicals into their foods just to get people hooked. And what you then find out is that you're just eating a lot of like empty carbs. It's not adding anything to you. It's actually taking away from you. So we were like, okay, let's focus on clean, good for you, category creating or category participating brands that have the potential to be good, strong, decent sized businesses and profitable businesses. And that's where we sort of then found our ethos, which was we're just acquiring good for you food and beverage and good for you food and beauty brands, and beauty brands, just because our mission as a whole is to fight this epidemic of ultra processed foods and also toxic skincare practices. And with that in mind, that's been the vision, and that vision can be executed in a lot of different ways. And the way that we're choosing to execute it is through M&A. So it's buying these businesses that have already started on that path, and then we're taking them and we're growing them or operating them into some of those bigger entities in the future, with the end goal of either keeping them for the long term, so like a buy and hold strategy, or we can sell the brands when we've taken them to the points in which we think we could have taken them to. So that, in essence, is just a little bit about me and a little bit about how Tillion came to be.
Yeah, I love that. I appreciate the background. And yeah, so I guess one follow-up question I would have is, what do you kind of look for when you're looking either at a beauty brand or something in the CPG or food and beverage space? I mean, what are some of the kind of like main characteristics that you look for in a brand that you might consider acquiring, between the product itself, but also anything specific about like the founder and their team that you look for as well on that side of things?
Yeah, so I think with a lot of the brands, we're looking for businesses that typically are operating on a single channel. So businesses operating on a single channel, because that gives us one proof. It gives us the ability to say, okay, they've actually done it on this channel. What would happen if we were to, let's say, start to expand this business with an omni-channel mindset? So if they're selling on maybe just, I don't know, the direct to consumer, have you explored maybe Amazon? Have you explored potentially retail? Have you explored other platforms, just so that we're increasing our GMV? Another thing is we're looking for businesses that are profitable. So ideally 20% net margin businesses. That just shows financial prudency. It shows strength in the numbers, and I think that profits is the baby of any good business, and you want a lot of babies. So I think it's just very good to have a business that's profitable, because it shows that there's that financial discipline there, and it means that unit economics are right within that business, and there are obviously ways for you to optimize profitability. That's a very key one, because sometimes we obviously infuse debt, and we need to be able to ensure that the business has the cash flow to be able to meet up with any sorts of payments that we may need to make. Now, we're also looking for businesses that have at least very strong retention rates. So I like a business in which revenue is recurring, and it can be recurring, whether that be once a month or several times a month, because there's a predictability to that. For example, one of our businesses is almost like a 60% retention rate business,
Oh,
and
wow.
it's very, very strong, because it means, one, that just tells me we have a really good product, and with that is the basis for scale. Once you have a really good product, and you have a strong brand to solidify and to build around that product, you can do, I think there's, if you do things right, you can do no harm. And it also means that there's the ability to expand product lines cheaply, because you're not having to obviously acquire those customers. They're within your funnel now, its own media, and you can market to them. Something else, say, okay, you guys are trying this. For example, we have a mushroom coffee. You've tried this mushroom coffee. Why don't you try this other coffee that we have? And then we're building sort of like our portfolio, and also we're testing internally before we start to scale things up. So we're doing it in a very cost-effective manner. And then when we actually then go out to market, we then have the confidence that it will be successful, and we'll get a return on our investment. So that's another thing. We're also looking for businesses that have a unique advantage, something that is unique to them, whether that be a certain process. For example, one of our business has a really strong, unique marketing process. It's proprietary information, really, and that allows us to generate very decent sales when it works. So something that's unique to them is something that's really strong, because again, that in itself is almost like a moat. A lot of businesses do the exact same things, but if you can try do something in a bit of a different way and get results, then that's obviously a competitive advantage. Looking for businesses that also have a small SKU count. So this is actually quite good, because it means that there's potential room for expansion. And as I said, if they've proved to be profitable, if they've proved to be well received, if they've proved to have repeat purchase, and they have maybe like one, two, three, four, five, less than 10 SKUs, it then means we can obviously scale that brand with product, and then layer on a marketing layer to that. We can get some decent hits there in terms of potential winning products that could that we could scale, and also potentially like products that we don't necessarily need to work on. So those are some of the things that we look for in the businesses. The founder themselves, they can stay. Typically, we have like an earn out period where the founder just gives us a lot of the information, because these are sorts of like founder-led businesses, small businesses, not very I would say process oriented or not very codified. It's really just in the founder's head. And then we come in, we try to codify as much as we can, put it on paper so that we get a full sort of 360 holistic view of the business and how it's working, so that we can obviously make improvements. But then also we know, okay, what are the core fundamentals of this business that we should keep as is? And what are the things that we need to innovate on? So the founder can stay or go, but again, it's always nice if you have a communicative founder and someone that's obviously happy to help, and typically they are. So yeah, those are some of the characteristics that we look out for.
Yeah, that's awesome. That definitely makes sense. And I guess what do you kind of find is like some of the biggest reasons when you come to try to acquire a business, and maybe a founder like really doesn't want to stick around. They're just looking for like a straight up exit, or just looking for you to take over. What do you find is like one of the biggest reasons why people are looking to a partner like you to kind of take over the business, or even with it, with or without an exit plan? Maybe they just want to go. Maybe they want to like stay for a while. What do you kind of find is some of the biggest reasons that lead to that eventual partnership and then and sale to your company?
I think one, in terms of, I'll start off with why they want to sell. There are a couple of reasons. One is I think maybe they're just tired. That's really one of the reasons. It's to run a business is not easy at all, especially to be the director, to be the head. There's a lot of stress, there's a lot of responsibility. And it's actually quite funny that I was listening to something, and it says that if you knew how hard it was going to be when you started your business, you probably would not have started that business. And that's the case. So a lot of these guys, they're just tired, really. They're looking for maybe like another challenge. They've been doing it for a long time. And in some cases, like they get to a place of comfort. I think that's one thing I've seen. You get to a place of comfort where, okay, this business is, if it's a one-man business, two-man business, three-man business, if you're earning a certain amount that keeps you very comfortable, you're not as motivated to, let's say, push a bit further. You're very happy with the status quo. But again, as new entrants come into the market, your market share will start to diminish if you do not take action. So some of the reasons, they're just tired. The other one is that they've probably just hit like a wall, in that they can't grow as much as they would like to grow, either because they don't have, let's say, the capital, they don't have the skills. And it's, for example, one of the it's kind of like the case with our first acquisition, in that the owner, I think it was a combination of both, a bit tired as well as also just lacking the skill, particularly from maybe like an expansion standpoint, in terms of, let's say, going outside a specific platform like the Amazon platform. Now it's a completely different ball game there, because then you have to obviously generate the traffic to the website yourself, and you have to do a little bit more sort of like marketing in order for you to stand out, because there's just more competition there. Whereas with Amazon, it's basically like a search engine, it's a shopping search engine basically. So that's another reason, in terms of just maybe like a lack of, I wouldn't say a lack of ambition, because I don't think ambition is the right word, but I think it's just a pause in ambition, or pause in ambition for this specific business, as well as also maybe just the skill set. And then thirdly, I think people are looking for the payday, really. If you put in a level of work after maybe a decade, 15 years, you might just say, look, this is the best time to exit. And in certain times, there's specific moments in which it makes a lot of sense to exit. Because whether that be, let's say, multiples are high. So, for example, when the aggregators came back in the day, for e-commerce, I think this was what, in like 2021, 2022, multiples, where it was a seller's market. Basically, you can sell your business for up to 8x your EBITDA. If that was to be the case, that's a perfect time for you to sell your business at potentially more than it's worth. So those are some reasons that I've seen and I found.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And so I guess I'm curious too. I mean, You obviously have a lot of conversation with a lot of businesses. It's not always going to be a perfect fit. I assume you probably talk to a lot more than you end up actually acquiring. What are some of the biggest like issues that you find just kind of generally across industries, people, companies that you look at and businesses that you talk to? What are the biggest, like some of the biggest pain points you see when you're considering maybe making an acquisition or in just having those conversations?
Yeah, I think one is just being prepared. Obviously, just being prepared is very, very key, because I think time kills deals. And if you're going to sell your business, it's not something that you decide on like tomorrow.
Right.
And even if you do, you probably need to put in a lot of work to get to that stage. So whether that be you're working with potentially maybe a business broker, and that person will almost be like your financial advisor. It's just like if you're trying to get a mortgage, you'll have maybe like a mortgage advisor that will help prepare the paperwork and things like that, just to make your application smooth, so that when you go to the bank, you're not going to get rejected for the loan. It's kind of like that. Obviously, this is a little bit, I'd say it's way more intense. But just being prepared, because being prepared just saves a lot of hassle. So if you have, for example, if you have accurate books, if you have, let's say, a folder for the entire business, obviously we deal with e-commerce businesses. So a lot of the things, a lot of the heavy assets that we're talking about, especially at this sort of like lower middle market stage, is intangible assets. We have stock, obviously, but the stock is not necessarily within a warehouse that might be owned to that business, except if the business obviously has its own warehousing. And then you have to look at obviously like leases, contracts, things like that. It's a bit of a different ballgame, but again, it's still under the same lens of being prepared, having all the information sort of like readily available. And if you don't, being able to get that information. So that's something that's very frustrating when maybe you might be having a conversation and then it's a case of, okay, we'd like to progress, but they don't really have the information to hand. And within that process, you might... It then becomes fairly lethargic in terms of trying to get the documents, because you're still having to run the business and then still considering it for sale. The other thing I think is just like the emotional attachment to the business. Like, it's very, very taxing. There's I would say like the core M&A aspect of things where you're doing like the actual like heavy technical work, but then a lot of deals really just fall down because of the emotions. The emotional investment, whether that be if let's say you had a business, Matt, and Matt's dog's bowls or something like that, and you've been working on it for like 20 years, and then I came over and I said, okay, this business is actually only worth 500,000, and in your mind it's worth 50 million, you're just going to be extremely angry that I valued your business at that. But again, I'll be valuing it based on sorts of like the historical data, as opposed to the time that you have spent working on that business. So just that emotional sort of investment is a emotional diligence, really, is a big thing. That's one. Yeah, I think that's one major thing, particularly as you learn more. Initially, you think it's really just about the business, but then you have to manage both. So you have to manage obviously the deal side of things, but then you also have to manage the other person on the other side of the table. So the best deals are one in which you can both win, as opposed to trying to get one over the other person. Obviously, you have to be fair in that you don't want to overpay for a business, but you also don't want to undercut the seller as much as you can. So yeah, I think those are two key ones: being prepared and then the emotional diligence.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that in the especially in the food and beverage space. I mean, we have so many CPG brands that come on the podcast, and I know 90%+ of them are one, very mission based; two, usually made out of some kind of personal need for themselves or their partners or their spouse or their kids or their grandmother, or their parents or something. So the backstories of all these brands, as I'm sure you know, I'm having these conversations too, are usually they're usually very organic and very, you know, they came from probably a very emotional time in that person's life to begin with. So I'm not surprised to hear that, but I appreciate you sharing that, because it's really interesting. And it's just one last question I always love to ask everybody that comes on the podcast. I meant to ask earlier, or maybe I missed you saying it, but when did you actually get started with Octillion exactly?
So it was on the 15th of November, 2020. That was
2020.
Yeah, that's when I registered the company. It's actually crazy. It's almost 4 years. Well, it's almost 5 years. Wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's when we got started. Literally at what I think that was just at the height of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting. And So I guess like to that point, one thing I always love to ask everyone is just, obviously if you go back to 2020, knowing everything you know now, a lot of stuff we talked about even on the pod here today, if you can go back and give yourself one piece of advice if you were starting this, this type of business again, what do you think that one piece of advice would be?
I think it would just be don't try and grow too quickly without having some of like the fundamentals in place. And I'm speaking, I would do most of the things the same way because I focus primarily, literally when I started on Octillion as a company, a lot of like the back end side of things to get us ready for when I just knew we were going to make an acquisition. I just had it in my mind that we were going to do it. I don't know how we're going to do it, but I just knew we were going to do it. And focused on like, okay, when we get to that point, how can we be super prepared, super ready? So a lot of it was spent building the things that I call the boring fundamentals of business that would enable you to scale. It's not about looking at, oh, what's the nicest logo and things like that. No, that's fairly amateurish. But it's like the processes. Okay, we do this. What happens after this? What happens after this? So I'll do that. But in terms of like now having acquired a business, one of the things that I would definitely like to like to turn back the time around is not trying to grow too quickly without having the fundamentals in place, because it's very evident that you need to have the fundamentals in place to scale sustainably. You can scale if you don't have the fundamentals in place, but at some point you will need to get those fundamentals in place, and it can then actually take you back. So not trying to scale too quickly without having the fundamentals in place is something that I would tell myself.
Yeah, and you're probably not surprised to hear this. That's actually a very common answer that I get to that question. And for the same reasons also, just being obviously, yes, you can scale with your revenue, you can scale with everything, but if you don't have the back end kind of logistical sides of things and all of your books and all the things that go on behind the scenes in check, you're just always going to be in a position of playing catch up with those things, which can cause a lot of problems down the line, whether it's, I mean, whether it's your taxes, whether it's your, literally everything. So I think that's really good advice. And as I mentioned right before we hopped on here, I mean, most of our listeners are also other, founders, or a lot of brand new founders listen to the podcast, even maybe they haven't been on the podcast. But so yeah, I think that's really good advice for anybody listening. It's really important, and it's a very common theme that I get when I ask that question. So it's not the fun parts or the glamorous parts of what running a business looks like, but arguably is definitely the most important. So but yeah, I just want to say thank you again for coming on, man. I really appreciate your time and your insights. I love what you're doing. It's super interesting. It's kind of a different perspective than we usually have on the podcast of a lot of times founders of brands, like types of brands that you work with, but this kind of different angle of being an acquisition entrepreneur, I guess you could say, is really interesting. And I think it's important for people to understand that that is a very viable option, if you're looking to do something on your own too, even if it's just one acquisition like where you started. So yeah, I really appreciate your time and your insights. And yeah, just want to, if you want to shout out your website, or just want to give me an opportunity to let people know, anybody might be interested in partnering with you on an official capacity, or just figuring out they like you, they want to figure out what your brands are to maybe make a purchase, just let people know how to stay in touch with you.
Yeah, please. I'm very active on LinkedIn, so feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. It's just iodisu. Then our website is octillioncapitalpartners.com. It has a LinkedIn page to that, so if you want to find me through that, you can also find me through that. So yeah, thank you so much, Matt, for having me on the pod. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for coming on, man.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.